So to start off our roundtable and get talking about waste management and recycling, I'd like to hand over to John Hutton from Prism.
Thanks, Mika. Hello, everybody. Nice to join you today, and hopefully, we'll have an engaging discussion about waste recycling and reduction. Okay, just need to reverse that. Okay, we've gone slightly too far in the presentation now. Just need to. Okay, I've not got the. I have to run through this and go back to the start. We seem to be having technical issues here. Okay. There we go. Okay, hopefully we'll start now. Okay. So it's quite a broad subject, is recycling management within the waste industry and the printing industry. The reason being that the printing industry isn't just a single industry, as you guys know. It covers a variety of sectors, and you all produce different types of waste and recycling. So it's a broad subject to try and cover in a 20-minute discussion. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put some structure around it and talk about achieving effective waste management to start with, then an overview of the waste and recycling industries. Then focus more and drill down into your waste and then your recycling, which we can pretty much segregate into fibre-based and plastic-based materials, although there are some peripheral wastes that you'll produce, so cover those. And then we'll talk about some projects that we're doing and looking at within the printing industries that may not be relevant to your sector or your specific type of manufacturing, but is relevant to the industry. So, how to achieve effective waste management? Well, there's four real areas of focus. So, there's the recycling, and recycling is particularly effective when you look at the quality of the recycling you can achieve. There's the legal compliance, the waste accountability, and the cost effectiveness of how you manage and handle your waste and your recycling. So I won't dwell on all these areas too heavily because the subject today is recycling, but it just is more relevant if you put some structure around your businesses. So legislation is a particularly stringent area within print because of the amount of waste that you produce. There's different directives to follow. Hazardous waste, particularly difficult because it's the most regulated industry there is. Primarily pushed by the contractor's duty of care, but also your own duty of care. And there's the packaging regulations, the landfill directive, which was changed in 2005 regarding what waste can and can't be put in there. And you have to put the whole thing together in some sort of structured format. There's then waste containment. You need to choose the right type of container depending on the waste or the recycling, the logistics of it, and the collection frequency of those containers. So, for example, if you've got 1100 litre wheelie bins for your cardboard or your general waste, and you only half fill them, then you're actually paying twice as much if they're collected on a weekly basis and they're only half full. So the right type of containment is critical in getting, first of all, waste or materials recycled, and secondly, the cost effectiveness of it. So the equipment that you do or don't need is also paramount, whether you purchase or rental equipment. Balers, compactors come in various sizes depending on your waste output. It depend on the type of baler you may or may not need. whether you rent it or lease it or purchase outright, depending on the ROI. You've then got landfill, waste to energy and recycling targets to look at within your business, not only to achieve from a commercial perspective, but also a moral perspective. You've got the balance of, is something more cost effective to send to landfill or waste to energy than it is to recycle? And that's often the case. And then you've got the materials to look at individually. Got looking at how you can maximize recycling, which we'll look at in more detail, segregation of those materials, the market knowledge that you need, which contractors are available, where markets are available within those materials, what access you have to those recycling markets, depending on the contractors, and the best practice of how to contain, label, segregate, and detail those materials. And then there's the services that are available as well. So you've got site audits and quotes, depending on which contractor you want to look at. Substrate recycling, more with the graphics industry, I suppose. We've got different types of materials. Achieving recycling rates can be problematic and challenging, depending on the availability of contractors, recycling facilities, and the volume that you produce. You've got the waste hierarchy, which you need to achieve. That's not a regulation. That's something that the Environment Agency asks you to achieve, which is basically a cost-effective waste management program working on the basis that landfill is the least desirable, then recovery, recycling, and reuse. You've got accreditations to consider, the BPIF accreditation, for example, but environmental CSR, and then the cost-effectiveness of the whole management. So I'd like to talk now about the waste and recycling industries and give you an overview of them. So to understand what recycling opportunities are available, you really need to know the markets that you operate within. So the waste industry and the recycling industry are not the same industry, they're totally separate. The waste industry is focused on collecting primarily large volumes or volumes of mixed materials to be treated as waste. That industry is very fragmented as well. It's not a single industry. It's very much dependent on what contractors are available within the regions, of which there are hundreds, the transfer stations that they can operate within the collection area, and the capabilities within that facility. The recycling industry has got more specific requirements. The waste industry can collect mixed waste and treat it pretty much as mixed waste with some segregation. But the recycling industry needs quality, it needs volume, it needs specific grades, and one recycler isn't necessarily the same as another recycler. So that's a much more challenging market to create materials that are desirable for the particular recyclers that are operating in those areas. So focusing on waste for a minute, unfortunately it's the waste industry that collects commercial waste. By that I mean mixed general waste in the bins that they offer you, the wheelie bins or FELs or 35 yards, whatever it may be, and there's very limited recycling opportunity within that. And that's because there's only mature markets available to those sorts of facilities, being fiber-based or soft plastic. There are some hard plastics, but in the commercial market, for commercial waste, hard plastic is very problematic to segregate. So what you basically have from the waste contractors who pick up all of your waste are transfer stations, which will, depending on their sophistication, segregate, maybe automatically, often not, often handpicked, certain materials that are desirable for the markets they have available. So the cardboard market, corrugated board, is desirable because it's readily available, and there are mature markets, domestic and export, the DS Smiths, Kemsley Mill, for example, is a cardboard reprocessor. And it's accessible to waste contractors to be able to commercially afford to segregate those materials, bale them, and take them to a recycling facility and be charged and receive more value than what it's cost them to actually undergo that process. There are there's some homogeneity because you can mix recycling materials for waste contractors to collect, known as DMR, dry mix recycling, which is cardboard, paper, polythene, hard plastics, but it doesn't guarantee that all that material will be recycled. For example, with many contractors in the UK where you can mix paper, fibre-based material with polythene, the polythene might not have a market for that particular transfer station, so the cardboard will get taken out and all the rest of it will go waste to energy. So it doesn't necessarily mean just because you've got a dry mix recycling bin, all that material is being recycled. So what we've got here is a couple of maps which the waste industry operate through. We have on the left the waste to energy facilities that are operational in the UK. They're the blue ones. It's 54. There's two incinerators being commissioned and there's 14 in construction. On the right hand side, we have a map of all the landfill sites in the UK. There was 574 landfill sites, which demonstrates quite clearly that the waste industry overwhelmingly operates in landfill and waste to energy, and recycling is a secondary operation as long as it's commercially viable. So segregation and recycling is the key. So to concentrate on recycling for a while, we've got split it again. It's challenging to talk specifics to a group that are from different areas of print management. So you've got narrow web label sector, which will have probably 70 to 80% label waste, which is going to be incinerated. You've got sheet fed, so you've obviously got more recycles there. Large format, they've got a lot more challenges because you've got polymer-based materials and small volumes of fiber-based materials often. Newspaper, the magazine, they often have a lot more recyclable capability because, again, it's a mature market, and so on. So point of sale, again, you've got mixed materials, mixed media, very difficult to form any sort of recycling infrastructure within the business, and print finishes possibly have more recycling opportunity. So what I've done is I've looked at fibre-based recycling, and then I've looked at polymer-based recycling and the opportunities between the two. So polymer-based is obviously, well, fibre-based also, but polymer-based is far more challenging now than it's ever been commercially. Domestically, it can be slightly different because domestically you can collect large volumes of mixed plastics, which can lead to plastics recycling facilities, again, depending on the technology available in your region. But since China closed its doors in 2017 on all plastics, the landscape changed completely on recycling. It also changed its policies on fibre-based material going in, which basically meant the tolerance of impurities going in, or contamination that was going in on a load was halved. So with cardboard, for example, if you have a certain level of threshold of contamination and it doesn't meet that threshold, it will return back. It won't be treated as waste to energy in China. It will be put back on the boat and returned back to the place of origin, which obviously means a lot of recyclers are nervous to take material over to China and about to find other outlets. So let's look how to maximize recycling. Okay. So fiber-based material, you've got more chance of recycling fiber-based materials from the facility than anything, because you've got the waste industry that offers a national infrastructure to collect fiber-based, and it's unlikely you'll find a waste contractor that will not be able to segregate fiber-based material or even bring in segregated fiber-based material and have a market for it. So you've got that in hand with a recycling infrastructure where the likes of DS Smith or Saika or SD Waste, you know, many, many paper and board contractors, although not as many as there used to be, also have a network and an infrastructure to collect material and take it back to their facility, usually for baling, and then return to a mill. The key to maximising recycling, whether it be fibre-based, and this is a theme that runs through presentation really, is to know your wastes. So with fibre-based, you've got many grades, whether it be paper, whether it be, you know, office paper, commercial paper, carton board. There's different types of carton board, the scan board, grey board, brown board, or even the corrugated material comes in different grades. So take corrugated, normal cardboard box. That's graded, and the commercial value changes depending on the grade. So what's called a 98.2 is a 98% pure material with 2% contamination. That will achieve a high rate relative to a board that's collected that is contaminated, say with tape or LD or labels or other types of contamination that may be avoidable, which will downgrade that fibre to say a 95.5 or a 90.10 or an 80.20, which is pretty poor. An 80.20 is 80% fibre or board and 20% contamination, which would be very non-cost effective if you were able to avoid that. So that's the key. Also, if you're a carton printer, segregating your types of board, and we've done this exercise many times where a printer will be mixing pure white scan board against printed scan board and grey board. So you get paid on the lowest grade because the collector isn't going to segregate that material. He's just going to bale it and sell it at the lowest grade possible. So by segregating what grades you have available, where possible, you're able to achieve the highest revenue for that material. The containment, again, is important, whether it's cost-effective to bale or to compact or to have in a small bins or large bins, whether it be, you know, depending on your output. The contractor availability. So one contractor may, in theory, you might have DS Smith, who's mill-owned, but may have a poor transport network to get to your facility and then take it back to their transfer station before baling gets into a mill. Whereas you might have a local guy who is not far from you at all, has got many customers in the area, likes the grade of material because he has a lot of it, can bulk it and get more revenue for it than the bigger guys would. So it's not necessary that what would appear to be the attractive contractors are offering you more or can give you more than the independents or the other way around. So it's worth knowing your markets and understanding the structure of how contractors work and what advice they can give you on the containment availability. And that'll reflect on the pricing. So you're also knowing the pricing is important. Some contractors will pay on an index linked price. Some will pay on the let's recycle price, for example. That's not always the highest price. Some contractors will pay slightly higher than the index linked let's recycle price because they have other markets to achieve. So that's the general theme on fibre recycling. So polymer recycling, plastic recycling, that's more complex. And it requires a lot more segregation. For domestic purposes, if you segregate your plastics like we all do now, we're all little eco warriors, you know, you segregate all your plastics at home, you believe that having those collected by the bin men will enable all your plastics, or a lot of people believe, enable your plastics to be segregated and recycled, and we're all doing the right thing. In reality, a lot of that plastic is simply goes waste to energy because the collector hasn't got the capabilities or commercial advantage to get those materials anywhere else to a recycling point. It may be that the facility has got a plastics recycling facility built into it, which can optically separate out PETs and PPs of hard plastics, in which case, you know, you've got a segregated route to recycling. But that's in the domestic market. In the commercial market, it's a lot harder. Again, as soon as you mix your wastes to have it collected, the likelihood of that material finding a recycler is highly unlikely. The likelihood is it will go to one of the incinerators that I pointed out, or one of the landfill sites. Even segregated polymer within a commercial environment is difficult. It's usually LD, film shrink wrap and film, that has a market for it. But again, depending on the quality, will very much depend on what price you achieve. So again, the same rules apply. You know your contractors, know their capabilities at their facility, you know how much you have to collect, how much they will pay you based on what they collect. Sometimes you're offered a dry mix recycling service where you can put your cardboard and your polythene all into one container. Let's say it's an FEL, you might get charged £10 an FEL. Whereas if you took your polythene out and baled it, there are contractors out there that will pay you £150, £200 a ton for a minimum of 3 tons, for example. So the differences are vast between what you can achieve commercially, depending on your output and what's available to you in the market. And grades of polythene are again a key issue. So clean polythene, clean shrink wrap will have a very high revenue attainment. It's a very sought after material. Whereas if you mix it with say blue wrap or blue packaging, and it becomes what's known as a jazz grade, it loses its value and becomes a very low grade recycled polymer. So again, containment's important, contract availability is important, segregating your waste and knowing the grades of your waste. It's always beneficial to attain independent advice, because a lot of the time, although you know, I work with many contractors and recyclers throughout the country and for many years, so I wouldn't tell tales out of school, but contractors will obviously only want to sell you the services that are available to them. And they also want to maximize their revenues and minimize yours, understandably. Independent advice will turn that on its head, will enable you to see the market and what is actually out there, what prices are achievable, and will work on your behalf against what the contractor is able to offer you and negotiate on your behalf. So that's often a good way of working around that. So there are other materials that are recyclable in the print market. Obviously, scrap metals, not as many. But again, there's mature markets available. There has been for many years. The scrap metal market historically was always the one that was mafia run throughout the waste industry. However, recent legislation changes has really helped that front. Cash payments aren't available anymore. You know, it's got to be through company transactions, which has really helped clean the industry up. And there's a lot of reputable companies out there now. Well, it has been for many years, but you know, there's real accountability and traceability throughout the metal markets. Hazardous waste, because that's legislation driven and has been for many years, you tend to find that hazardous waste contractors who who have the capability to recycle materials will recycle materials. Many of it isn't. Liquid wastes and most solid wastes are recovered. Liquid wastes often, some go to as chem fuel, for example, anything that high calorific value, UV inks, solvent-based inks, probably go for chem fuel. Emulsions, water-based material, could be treated via reducing the COD levels and discharging to drain when it becomes a consent discharge. The recyclable element comes in when you're looking at chemical drums, empty chemical drums, empty plastic, empty ink pails. These can very often go through wash plants and shredding plants. At the end, you get cleaned waste HDPE that could be worth £300 a tonne. The difficulty for the contractor when you realise that material's worth £300 a tonne is that they were quite rightly saying, yes, but we have to collect a cage of air, basically, run it through a plant, shred it, go through all the resource associated with it, the labour, the fuel, the mains, all that sort of thing. And when you get to the end price, we're probably making £10 a ton, even though we're getting 300. So it's one of those areas where you'll probably always be paying money for it because there's an awful lot of process to get to that point. Wood waste, there's been a lot of improvements in wood waste over the last few years. Pallets are the biggest pain in most printers' side. General waste contractors are the best for small collections. Large companies often using specific wood recyclers is the best bet, whether it be 35-yard bins, rear-end loader bins, or an Arctic trailer. Nowadays, with pallets, 65% of them go for biofuel, 9% for MDMF, and the rest for residual. It's still at a cost because there's still a lot of work involved in getting the material, even though it inherently looks like it should be valuable because it's wood at the end of the day. There's still a lot of work involved in getting it to a point where it's not landfilled or recovered. Same rules apply. It's the same thing. Know your grades, know the segregation, know the containment, contractor availability. And that will enable you to assess, once you have a picture of what's available contractor-wise and their capabilities, what the commercial value is, balanced against what availability within your production, which again is that's often limited. Containment, it's all very well and good having lots of different areas of recycling, but how many points of segregation do you create within your factory or outside your factory? And often that's the balancing act. Okay, so just some of the work that is being achieved at the moment in the graphics industry. I just wanted to touch on this because you can often paint quite a bleak picture of the waste industry picking up all your waste and most of it going waste to energy or landfill. Recycling is difficult, but there is inroads in innovation within different sectors. So one sector is the graphics industry, problematic because of the small volumes, not just at the print sites, but at the retailers, end users, wherever it may be, where the materials scattered before end of life. So some of the projects that we're doing at the moment is PVC and polyester banner. We have a capability of taking it to a facility for recycling. It's not a recycler, it's a manufacturer of low-grade PVC products. It just so happens that PVC and polyester banner grade can be blended into the feedstock of the current PVC grades, waste grades that are used to make the product, which are traffic cones, portable signal policemen, portable traffic barrier bases, basic things like that. These things are made en masse. So it's great news for the graphics industry regarding this, because it's an inherent problem, not just for manufacturers, but for suppliers and end users alike. Rigid polypropylene has always been a desirable plastic for plastics recyclers on the whole. And a plastics recycler, there's about 84 in the country, but they're not all, you know, plastics recyclers don't all do the same thing. You know, that they range from filmic recyclers to just PVC window recyclers. You know, there's many, many grades throughout the polymer family. But there are a reasonable number of recyclers that polypropylene is attractive to, because it's the most readily available polymer available. So we've created an infrastructure of collecting rigid polypropylene, Corexes and Tribonds of this world, and getting them to a recycler, having them shredded. And it's a low grade plastic. On the scale of waste polypropylene, graphics polypropylene might be at the bottom, and often covered in ink, even, you know, whether it be latex or UV ink, some solvent, not desirable. So plant pots is kind of the end result. So kind of probably the lowest on the spectrum of desirable recycled material is PVC foam board, widely used. I think it's kind of been replaced where possible, but it has probably always will have a place, because it is very printable, has a lot of durable applications. There are some recyclers who will take it in, not many. The trouble with this material is a full Arctic trailer will weigh about 4 tons. It's difficult to machine. Needs a lot of extraction, it needs a consistent volume coming in and consistent production granulators, because you don't want to be changing over all the time, because it's a difficult material to clean down. But there are some outlets out there that will take this material in and recycling. Dibond is an aluminium and polyethylene composite within the graphics industry that has many outdoor applications. That wording there is incorrect, so I must apologise for that. That is usually exported, although Brexit has put a mainstream halt on that. We now have a couple of facilities in the UK that are small outlets, but they can separate the aluminium from the PE. The aluminium goes for recycling, but the PE is of low grade, so that goes waste to energy. But it is an option now. We're working on a couple of other schemes, retail take back, so the self-adhesive PP and PVC, but PP is the more attractive material for recycling. These are the things that go on cars, like the car wraps, side of buses. And we're working with a couple of recyclers that have created production lines to be able to shred the PP and granulate it and successfully get it into a format where it can be recycled. We've also got a retail take back for other polymer based material, whereas we can supply cardboard boxes to retail outlets that they can then end of campaign. Say, for example, PVC banner, roll it up, place it in the box, and we can courier it directly to a recycler or to a central facility where we can bulk it and then get it to recycle from there. So there's a lot of, you know, forward innovation going on in the industry. So to summarise, again, as I've said, quality is the key when it comes to recycling. Knowing your grades, how to segregate your grades out, the market knowledge of how contractors can deal with your materials, what materials they deal with, what materials are preferable to a contractor, whether it be a recycler or a waste contractor. Some are more desirable than others. And following these guides, you're able to maximize the achievable revenue for the various recycled materials that you have within your business. And that's it. That's it. So thanks for listening. Hope you found it useful.
Thanks, John. I'd now like to hand over to Matthew Peacock, who is one of our BPerf affiliate consultants. So he will elaborate more on waste and how to make cost savings. Matthew, I think you're on mute.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right, sorry about that. Okay, so I've been involved in the printing industry since 2003 when I started with Vision in Print. So I'll just try and get the share. Have we got my share there?
Maybe. Yes, yeah, it's all up and running.
Well, okay. So I'm going to talk about how to reduce material waste. And we all want to do that for environmental reasons, of course, but I think there's a lot of opportunity to actually increase profit. So I've done this based on one case study, but in fact, the main points apply to a lot of these projects which I've done. So the first point is that these percentages which I've got here are fairly typical, and I'm talking about a general commercial printer using basically about paper. So John had some very interesting stuff about other materials. I learned a lot from that. Thank you, John. But here we're talking mostly about papers. So typically, say a company with a £10 million turnover might spend about 50% of that on material. And typically about a third of that, or 25% of it, is waste. And that's quite an astonishing amount, but it's true. And if you look at the profitability of a general commercial printer, it's a pretty tough business, and they might be making 2 or 3%. So some of the clients I've had have actually been making very little profit, and by doing the waste reduction, they've actually been able to stay in the business for another year or two at least. So it can have quite an impact. So the first thing I would say is have a good estimate of your cost of your waste. And it's fairly simple to find out how much paper you're buying and the value of it. John talked there about the importance of segregation. I'll just say a bit more about that in a minute. But in fact, your waste contractor can give you a lot of very useful information. So if you look at the invoices, that will often show you how many tons of paper have been removed. And that will give you a very quick, crude, but useful number for the percentage of paper which is actually getting taken away by your contractor. So that's a simple thing to do at the start. And really, that just is worth doing to open your eyes. So if the more you segregate your waste, the better the information that you can get. And John's talked about the importance of segregating the waste anyway. So I'd really reinforce that point. But one of the very good reasons for doing it is that you can get a lot of data. So segregation is a whole topic in itself. I tend to say try and label the bins with a nice big clear label, show a picture of what material waste is that should go into it. It can be handy to work out the value of the material that's in a typical bin. That sort of gets everybody's attention. So half a ton of paper in a bin, you know, you may have paid 500 quid for it. And if you put it on a mobile carrier like this, you can move it from bin to bin, which saves a lot of trouble having different coloured bins and then not having enough of the right colour. So that's the first thing, segregate. If you can get some detail, then there's a tool on the BPIF environmental roadmap, which Mika will give you directions to, and you can use that to put in the your estimates of the tonnages of different types of waste, and that'll give you some idea as to a probable impact on the profit. So once you know the you've realized how much opportunity there is, it's important to involve the whole senior management team. And the point I really want to make here is waste appears on the shop floor, but it's mostly caused by what happens in the office areas. And that's not well understood. So you have to actually get the executives who are responsible for those areas involved. I'm not saying that some of the waste isn't caused by the shop floor, that, I mean, obviously it is, but the majority of it, I would say, is often from the offices, office processes. And the next big point I'd make is go and have a look. You know, take up a new hobby, dumpster diving. There's a lot of information in skips. So at one time I was managing a company making fiberglass products, not print, but I used to arrive in the car park in my suit and large car every day. And then the first thing I would do is go and look in the skip. And then at 10 o'clock, we'd have our daily production meeting and I'd be asking people about what went wrong in the night shift with quite a lot of detail. And it took about 6 months before they realized what I was doing. Up till then, they thought I'd got a sneak on the shop floor. So it's very worthwhile looking in the skips. It's essential. And when I run these programs, we actually walk around with the senior team and look in the skips. And, you know, you can pull out a lump of stuff and you can see it's make ready waste, or you can see it's a job that's gone wrong, or you've got a lot of trim, that type of thing. So take a sample and then go, you can go back to find out where it's been caused. The next thing I'd say is walk backwards. So when you're doing a waste walk, start over in your dispatch area and have a good look in the skips, and then go through to your finished goods store and then back through the manufacturing process, through finishing, printing, into the material store, and then go back through the offices. And the reason is that you're picking up evidence and of things which have gone wrong. And the things that have gone wrong that cause the waste will be upstream of where you're looking at it. So as you walk backwards, you're actually starting to acquire evidence and you're able to start talking to people about what's happened and getting a grip on what you can do to improve it. So, Sean, I think, you know, very interesting presentation. Thank you very much. I won't say a lot about that, except how important it is to have a reputable waste contractor. They will give you, obviously, a much better service. And there's a very strong legal requirement for it as well. If you use a cowboy, then you'll get the trouble that you deserve. So moving onwards from the waste skips in the yard, maybe we're going to finish goods. So not in a typical situation here where the stores is fairly crammed. I'm often told the trouble is they've got too small a store. When we go through it, we discover that actually what they've got is too much stuff. And a lot of it is completely unnecessary. And you start finding a lot of dead bodies in there. So it used to be a few years ago that you'd find a lot of university prospectuses for a couple of years before, which had been overordered, overmade, and then nobody had the heart to chuck it out. But meanwhile, it's occupying space in the finished goods store. And often, you know, I found clients are actually renting space elsewhere to accommodate the material they do need. So, you know, actually save quite a few £1,000 by getting rid of the stuff they shouldn't have had. And then, of course, that raises questions as to how it arose that you acquired the redundant stock and the scrap. And that will often take you back to the sales process. So this is what I mean about waste material actually being caused further upstream from where you see it. And this is why you need to walk around with the salespeople and the finance people. And it's only by looking at it that really the lesson starts coming home. So going into the finishing area, this is obviously a binder. There's lots of detailed stuff I can talk about here, but typically what we will find is that in finishing, they'll be finishing more than they need to. The customer might have ordered 10,000 and finishing is finishing 12,000 because they've got all the material as overs, which have been provided from, you know, estimated in and included to make sure that they don't run out of material and nobody has to do a reprint. That's basically insurance cover against the problem in the finishing or subsequent area. And that ends up as waste material, which nobody really has appreciated the cost of it. So, of course, it is necessary to have some insurance against things going wrong, but it really is time to start looking closely at the finishing processes and saying, why do things go wrong? Can we actually make it impossible for things to go wrong rather than just providing a lot of overs to cover it? So there's a lot of things that can be done in finishing to reduce the waste. And then we come to printing. So obviously mate ready is a big one. Modern technologies help because modern presses are much better at reducing the weight ready, but nonetheless, there's often savings to be made. And actually in examples I've always found of printers themselves have been able to provide very useful ideas as how to reduce the mate ready waste and the ROM waste. There's more information about that on the PPIF environmental roadmap as well. So I'll let you have a look at that. Companies which do web printing with real waste, everybody seems to get very concerned about core waste, and so they should. But in reality, very often it's not the core waste that's the biggest factor, it's the amount of damage that's caused to the outside of a reel. And it might be slightly boring, but the fact is, if the outside of a reel gets damaged, you can end up scrapping a great deal more paper than or material than is on the actual core. And the core, the damage to the outside of the reel is because of handling problems in the warehouse. And I've even known where inspection goods inwards have sliced off a nice wadge of paper from the outside. And then that's led to a lot of waste being actually scrapped to get past the point where they've taken their sample from. Another thing to look at with reel handling is that quite often they get rolled around the shop floor. It's very important in that case that the shop floor is clean and doesn't have grit and dirt in it or studs, which cause damage. This might seem detailed, but it's really surprising how much material can be saved from looking at things like that. Just going back into the paper stores, really important to have that well organised. And in this particular case, one of the things we found was the biggest causes of waste was having orphan pallets. So this is where the company will get a new supply of paper for every job. And although the specification of the paper might be similar to a previous one, it's come from a different supplier and they can't use it on a new job. So the paper just sits there, the part pallet used, eventually it has to get scrapped, taking up space. So the solution to this is to actually standardize the material and perhaps look at single sourcing your paper with a supplier, which is a large and possibly controversial topic, but it has, I think, a very powerful effect. So again, the environmental roadmap gives more detail on that, and maybe that might be worth having a look at. So having had a walk around and maybe once a month do this with a senior management team, then you're picking up red splodges, which is where you're finding the waste. And when you track them back, you actually find, as I say, a lot of them are being caused by sales problems or by estimating putting too many overs in or purchasing, getting paper from different suppliers, which can't then be used, those sort of issues. So that's where you start, you're able to start identifying real things, to opportunities for improvement. And I often think that actually half a battle, of course, is engaging the employees. So when you walk around, you're already giving a great signal to everybody that you really care about this and it matters. And you're also able to involve people by asking them to come over and help them to help you understand why it's caused. And usually often there's a really good, people are very willing to come up with good ideas. Everybody wants to reduce the environmental impact, and I've never known reducing waste to threaten anybody's job. So it's something that a whole company can get behind. I've just put in the Plan, Do, Check, Act. If you're doing lean or continuous improvement, this cycle's well known, I hope, which is when you plan to do something, reduce the waste, do it, see whether it worked, and next time, if it worked, do it again, and if it didn't work, do something different, otherwise you're mad. But that, again, is something you'll find on the environmental roadmap. So at the end of a program, or every now and again, we've typically found that we could reduce the waste, and you'll see that the waste saving is a pretty small slice of the total amount of waste there. It's looking to me like about 10-15% of the actual waste. So we haven't actually reduced the waste much, but it's not unusual to find actually it's double the profit. So if you can make even a small gain, it's having a big impact on the profitability of the business. These are some examples. They are from Vision in Print. So these are up to about 2012. But you see a number of different types of printer there and some fairly good numbers. And that's it, Mika. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matthew. That was great. Thanks, John. And now I'd like to just open it up to anyone that's within the roundtable that has any questions. You can either unmute yourself and ask your question, or you can put it in the chat box and I'll ask it for you.
Hi, Nikki Moran here from Holman Iggesund. I've got a question for John, just a curiosity question really about the waste to energy. And obviously they're commissioning and mooring construction. Do you think that this is a false economy based, you know, with the things that are coming in with regarded to EPR and the Green Deal and the circular economy? I just was interested to sort of see what your thoughts were.
Yeah, hi Nikki. Do you mean a false economy as in why are they building more or commissioning more?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose some of these things, you know, they've been planned a long time ago and sometimes it's difficult, but I just, where there's so many things that are now happening that are looking at to sort of how to increase recycling and of products in general, I'm just curious to know.
Yeah, it's a fair question. I think perception may be playing a large part in how people see the innovation of more recycling, and surely that would negate the opportunity for more waste to energy, where in fact the opposite is probably true. You know, the idea would be to reduce landfill sites and increase waste to energy. Europe, for example, there's many countries in Europe that don't have any landfill sites and they're all waste to energy. There's always going to be an overwhelming amount of material, waste material, that isn't recyclable and has got no recycling opportunity. So the next best option would be creating energy. The difficulty in this country is that on the whole, we don't perceive creating waste to energy plants as a way to get to create energy, whereas in Europe they see waste to energy plants as a way to create energy for electricity for the grids. The UK has got a very different outlook on incineration. We still on the whole think it's dirty, and there's a reluctance for any government to want to go ahead with the green incineration because it just doesn't look very good. In fact, you only have to look at the amount of incinerators being built near poorer areas, for want of a better word, and it far outweighs any incinerators being built near more affluent areas. So the perception is in the UK, incineration is not a great one, although it's a very regulated industry and, you know, emissions are very stringent, but there is really more need for waste to energy than ever. You know, there's 10 to 1 landfill sites to waste to energy sites, and the recycling infrastructure isn't being developed to the degree that is required relative to the amount of mixed waste that's been created. Does that give you some structure to the answer?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, as I said, I was just intrigued.
Thanks, Nikki. Thanks, John. Any more questions?
Yeah, hi. It's Lee here from Calvert's Print.
Hi, Lee.
Hi there. Yeah, so thank you for Matthew. Really enjoyed that. Really engaging presentation. Stuff that I've kind of been told before, but give me a fresh impetus to look at it again. So I'll be referring back to that. But my question is really is for John, and just on a couple of kind of troublesome waste streams that I've come across in the past. I don't know if he's got anything to kind of offer up on that. One would be sheet fed offset LIFO printing blankets, kind of rubber blankets. I don't think I know where they get currently recycled. I think they used to be kind of shredded in some places, used for playgrounds, various kind of sort of small projects. But I don't know if there's any more development in that area. And also on a much larger scale, buying packets of paper from, you know, graphic paper merchants often come in like these wrappers, waterproof wrappers, that have kind of got like a waxy lined coating. Again, I've had real trouble finding contractors to take those. Some of them do. I guess if they're listening to you, it kind of goes to like a low-grade waste stream, but some of them didn't want to take it at all. So I don't know if you've got any insight on to kind of paper wrappers and what's being done across the industry, because imagine there's tens of thousands of these produced each week.
Yeah, you're right, Lee. Yeah, there certainly is. So it's on the contaminated blankets front. When you have contaminated blankets collected, they still have the aluminium bar, which is cut off and, you know, will be bulked and sent for recycling, because, you know, as I alluded to before, if it's commercially viable to do, then it will be done in aluminium. It's a low grade aluminium, but it's got enough value to warrant cutting the blade off. It needs to be removed for recovery purposes. On the front of recycling, they are very problematic materials to recycle. Contaminated for a start, so that the contamination is the ink contamination is a real issue. You've also got the problem of it being, because it's so problematic. Why does any recycler want to take it on? You know, that's the fundamental question. There's so much good material in the plastics, the waste plastics market, plastics recycling market, that all plastic recycling businesses aim their business at largely available materials like PET trays, for example, PET trays, or, you know, things that come in volume, they can find external markets for. Most plastics guys in this country have got external markets. There's not much, you know, not much call for it in the UK. So to try to take on the challenge of recycling blankets and then find a market for them, there really isn't the interest level there. So I'm afraid, you know, recovery is the next best option. On the question of siliconized paper, so this will be the paper you're talking about. It's got the siliconized side. There's a couple of problems with that. The first problem, again, is that it's ink contaminated. It's very often heavily printed on one side, if I'm right in thinking yours is. Even if it wasn't printed on one side, so let's assume that it's just siliconized paper, there's no there isn't one single recycling outlet in the UK that recycles siliconized paper. The nearest ones to us are Lemsing's paper mill in Austria that desiliconizes the material and then repulps the paper. And there's UPM Raffetax in Germany. You may know that they've got their own problems at the moment. They're not, you know, 40% of paper output has come to a halt because of the strikes throughout UPM, which are desperately trying to resolve. But to get material, siliconized paper into a mill, it's got to be, as in any mill, in any grade, it's got to be of a certain specification. And siliconized paper has got to be contamination free of anything. It's got to be on unsupported rolls or baled. Baled is a problem because you can't guarantee the lack of contamination within it. And it's got to be, exporting is a problem because of Brexit. Although we, you know, we do export some material over to Lemsing. But the shorter answer is, it will go waste to energy at best in this country. From all the facilities that you know, like yours, that produce it and put it in the bin, there is no options. And sometimes that's just how it is. And that might relate back to Nikki's point of, you know, why is this, seems to be more call for incineration, because there's just so much material out there that isn't going to be recycled. And there's a lot of greenwashing, and there's a lot of talk about recycling, but down on the ground, and in the nitty gritty of it all, the majority of material is still unrecyclable, and there's still not enough infrastructure being created because it has to be commercially viable to create it. And it's largely in domestic applications that's the place for it to sit. So I hope that.
Yeah, thank you. That's really useful. Cheers for the insight.
Yeah, pleasure.
Thanks, Lee. Thanks, Sean. Any further questions from anyone else?
That's an easy grilling.
So I will take that as there's no further questions. What we will do, we will share all the information that was shared within this roundtable, and we will share the recording with you guys that have attended. We will also give you kind of direction to more resources. As Matthew mentioned, we have the environmental roadmap, which covers a lot of stuff that's been discussed within this roundtable and beyond. And we'll also give you the opportunity to, if you think of any further questions, we'll put a bit of a call for action email account on that communication, so you can direct any sort of waste management recycling questions that you have to us, and we can answer them post this roundtable. So a big thank you to Matthew Peacock and John Hutton for presenting on waste to us, and thank you all for attending this roundtable this afternoon, and I hope you have a great further afternoon and a great evening, everyone.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you all. Thanks. Bye.